It's time to Fade the Chalk.
Fade the Chalk.
Presented by the FTN Network, helping you win your fantasy leagues and dominate in DFS. And now, here are your hosts, Derek Brown and Adam Pfeiffer.
What is up? Welcome into the Fade the Chalk podcast, brought to you by the FTN Network. I am your host, D-Bro, joined at the hip, as always, by my co-host, Adam Pfeiffer. So, FTNFantasy.com, FTNDaily.com, and Bets.com are all live, baby. We have a mountain, a ginormous mountain-sized content going on every single day. I think Daniel Kelly threw it out there on Twitter. We have 800-plus articles live on all three sites, as well as we just released the FTN Prop Shop. So this bad boy is like basically Google for prop bets. You go there, search any team, player, etc. across all different legal sports books to find the bets you want to smash. So head over to ftnbets.com/prop-shop and take that bad boy for a test drive. On today's show, we're going to continue to preview all of the positions. Today, we have the wide receiver position up, and we had to bring in the conductor of the Calvin Ridley hype train, Fantasy Pros lead NFL analyst and podcast host Mike Tagliere. You can follow him on Twitter at Mike Tagliere NFL. Tags, thanks so much for stopping by, man. What is going on?
Nothing much, man. Just another day locked in the house, doing some football work, trying to get it done before I'm going to take a week off next week to prepare for kind of like the onslaught of fantasy content. Because as you know, once we get to August, content starts rolling out, season's there in September, and then it's a grind up until Christmas. And yeah, let's just get ready for it.
Dude, I'm so excited. I'm pumped for this episode. I mean, we've been talking about this back and forth for 3-4 years, pre-FTN, like multiple podcasts and avenues. I'm stoked to have you on here to talk White House today. Adam, I know you're sitting there behind the curtain. What's up, dude?
I'm chilling, man. It's been fun getting this podcast off the ground the last couple weeks or so, and we've been doing these position previews. Had Brad on to do running backs, Anthony back a week and a half ago or so to do quarterbacks, and yeah, we're just continuing to get on these titans in the industry. And I tweeted it out, but you and Tags can fight over Calvin Ridley this afternoon. Because, look, man, everybody knows Calvin Ridley is going to be that next breakout guy, but, I know Tag's been on this for as long as anybody, maybe longer than anybody. I know you love Calvin Ridley, so, yeah, it'll be fun. It'll be a fun podcast. It's always good to talk football with people who love it as much as you.
Absolutely, man. Well, let's dive into it. Wide receiver position. So, Tags, first off, to kick this thing off, I've got to get your whole take here as far as just from a strategy standpoint. I know everybody's talked about it religiously, about how deep the wide receiver position is. Are you on board with hammering running backs early, or considering where you're drafting from? Could you see yourself just stacking wide receivers early in a draft and then addressing running back? Where do you lean as far as that goes?
No one really wants to hear this, but it depends because like a lot of people want to say, okay, I have the 8th draft spot. What am I shooting for at number 8? Now, what am I shooting when it comes back to me at like 15 or whatever it is? And I'm like, well, it just depends on who's on the board, right? Because I'm not going to pass up value. If you get someone like Michael Thomas or Davante Adams fall to you at like pick number 8, I'm going to take one of those wide receivers. Ideally, if you have a pick in the first 5 or 6, I think you have to go running back. And I say that because if you look at the running backs that are going to be there on the way back around, you might not be happy with who your RB1 is. Like, I don't want someone like Josh Jacobs as my RB1 this year. I know a lot of people like Josh Jacobs. He's going in the first round and all that, but he's just not my cup of tea. Where I'd probably be looking at someone like maybe like an Aaron Jones. And, knowing that they added some more players in the backfield, it just makes me a little bit more weary about that backfield. I love Aaron Jones, the player. He's probably a top 5 running back in the NFL, but again, I want to get one of those workhorses on my team. And if you take a Michael Thomas or a Davante Adams at, at number 4 or number 5 overall, then all of a sudden you're coming back around. You're just hoping a player falls to you. I never want to feel like I have to hope a player falls to me. Ideally, I get one top 10 wide receiver, one top 10 running back, and then I kind of go, I take value the rest of the way of the draft. I never walk into a draft with a certain strategy, which is, I know it's not the cool thing to say, and I know it's not the hot thing to say where it's like, we want a hot take, but I am such a value-based drafter. It just all depends.
Yeah, and I think it's really a big point of contention as well as size of leagues, how many wide receivers, things of that nature you're starting, because I think there's a lot of different ways to slice that. Like 10-team leagues, I'm more about trying, because everybody's going to have all-star lineups. It's really who has the best set of all-stars. So the elite of the elite at positions. So if I'm like at the end of the first round and I take whoever I think is, and we're going to get to it, my wide receiver one on the board, I'm fine with that. Mm-hmm. Especially when you're considering, okay, I'm starting two wide receivers, so I can get this anchor, and my all-stars can be better than your all-stars. Adam, where do you lean? Are you smashing running backs first few rounds, or are you like tags? It just kind of depends.
Yeah, so we obviously talked about the running back strategy on the running back episode, and it's tough because I tend to, the more I do drafts, and I've been doing a ton of drafts just, you know, for content and just for my own, you know, I've been noticing that you just feel a lot better having that secure duo at running back. I like to have two borderline workhorses out of my first three picks, but like Tag said, I've never, ever been, unless it's for like an article or for a certain league, been somebody that goes into a draft saying, okay, I'm drafting this position on this round, so on and so on. So for me, it really depends. But again, I think what's also making an impact is the whole situation with the COVID and how we're not going to have preseason. And I think that hurts the running backs more than it hurts these receivers. So like you look at guys like Clyde Edwards-Helaire and Jonathan Taylor, who, you know, probably going to go in the first four rounds of drafts, you know, that definitely hurts them a little bit in terms of, you know, your comfortability with them. To where, okay, maybe that makes me want to get, you know, some of these veteran running backs who are in good situations where they are definitely going to get, you know, 15 plus touches, 15 plus carries right out of the gate. So it depends. But I also think it gets a lot of these drafts, and we'll talk about it, where I'm in those middle rounds and all those sophomore receivers are there, and I just want those guys. So if you do go running back early, like those guys are going to be there, and we'll talk about it. But it's interesting this year for sure.
So, Tags, if you're at the back end of the first round and you're staring, you're peering into the pre-draft and you see your wide receiver one on the board still, who is that guy and are you willing to snag him there?
Yeah, it's Michael Thomas. And yes, I think once you get outside the top five running backs, you could start to consider Michael Thomas, because then you'll have a pick in the first half of the second round. And then you could probably get one of the running backs that you're comfortable with as a low-end RB1, maybe like a Nick Chubb or something like that. But yeah, I mean, I have Michael Thomas, the wide receiver one. I don't think it's like out of this world to say that Davante Adams is the wide receiver one. I've had them wide receiver one and wide receiver two. That's the first tier for me. And Julio Jones is teetering on it, but I'm kind of expecting somewhat of a shift in Atlanta where it's like Julio Jones is going to start to lose some of that upside at 31 years old. Calvin Ridley is gaining upside. He's gaining steam. He's obviously in the third year. We used to talk about third year breakouts for wide receivers all the time. All of a sudden, it's not the cool thing to talk about anymore. But Calvin Ridley is entering year three. Last year, I don't think people realized what he was on pace for. He was on pace for over 1,050 yards and 8 touchdowns, which would have been the wide receiver 14 had he played that out. So with Mohamed Sanu gone, they never really replaced him. Again, Ridley's going to take a step forward, so I don't put Julio in that top tier with Michael Thomas and Davante Adams, but he's just outside of it, because once you get past those three wide receivers, that's where I'm like, you know what, I could put the next few guys in like a giant bundle, like Tyreek Hill, DeAndre Hopkins. There's obviously some current concerns about him this year with a new team, guys like that, that you start to wonder, and like, okay, there are question marks around those guys, so I definitely don't mind taking a wide receiver in the second half of the first round. So whether it be Michael Thomas, Davante Adams, or, you know, even Julio Jones around that 1-2 turn, I'm good with those guys.
So, and to your point, I mean, I know Thomas is number one. I look at Davante Adams, and I can't get away from him as my number one wide receiver this year. I think, ultimately, like you're talking about, we're splitting hairs here. But for me, I look at Adams, and all I see when I stare at Green Bay is the perfect storm that Michael Thomas saw last year. Like, and we saw this play out in a very abbreviated version, but when Adams came back from injury last year, on a 16-game pace, he was averaging 11.3 targets per game. That would have put him at 182 on a full season. And Michael Thomas had 185 last year. So Adams was on that pace last year. Mm-hmm. We just saw it. And it kind of gets lost in transmission because he didn't play the full 16. And he was behind only Thomas in target share. So I think all of those things, like, we can talk about for days about Green Bay draft and all that kind of stuff. That has been discussed at tons already. Mm-hmm. But I think that all of those things are still firmly in place, that we see this Michael Thomas conundrum, or like that is brewing up in Green Bay. And Adams is just going to stack targets this year. Like, even if they go more run heavy, he's the guy. He's the focal point. He is the number one for me. And so when I'm looking at Thomas, I just see all of what happened last year projected over to Davante Adams. But Adam, where do you stand? You're going to be the guy that leans it one way or the other, because Tags is with MT, I'm with Adams. Who you got?
I think what's really going to be the differentiator, we could see, and it's not going to make Michael Thomas outside the top, you know, even three probably in targets among receivers, but New Orleans has not had any sort of semblance of consistency as at their second wide receiver position in a long time. It's been, you know, big Traquan Smith games, it's been big Ted Ginn games, what have you. For essentially, Alvin Kamara has been their number two receiver, you know, since he's entered the league. Now they have Emmanuel Sanders, who could give the, like, this team does not target their number two receivers. Like, it's a huge reason why Michael Thomas just had the most historic receiver season ever. If that changes and Emmanuel Sanders warrants more targets and more consistent targets per game than any of those kind of, you know, boom or bust guys they've had in the past, that could be enough, especially if we project Davante Adams to see another 30% target share like you saw last year. That could be enough to make Davante Adams the number one guy. I have Michael Thomas number one right now. I was just doing rankings this afternoon. I kind of want to change it, because if that comes to fruition and Emmanuel Sanders is, you know, a consistent option in this offense, that could be enough. Not to make Michael Thomas bad or anything, but because we already know with Green Bay not addressing the receiver position at all, that Davante Adams, I mean, he was second in targets when he returned from injury last year. He was targeted on like 19% of his snaps. Like, we already know he's probably going to, you know, there's probably more games than not where he has 10 targets or more. So I think the Emmanuel Sanders factor is really interesting.
Yeah. By the way, Davante Adams, he's played 27 games over the last 2 years. He's scored at least 16 PPR points in 23 of those games. Like, again, I think we're splitting hairs at the top there with those guys, and it's probably going to be decided for you unless you're willing to take a wide receiver inside the top four picks. I mean, I'm guessing it's probably going to be decided for you depending on where you fall in the draft, because a lot of times Michael Thomas is off the board by the fifth pick. But Davante Adams is not a bad consolation prize. If you're stuck choosing between someone like, you know, Derrick Henry, Joe Mixon, I even throw Kenyon Drake into that mix of those running backs in that tier. If you're torn between those guys, if you wanted to go Adams over those guys, I wouldn't fault anybody.
So, Tags, I'm so glad you brought up Drake, because we were talking about draft strategies. And the one thing that I wanted to get in here, because I know you love Kenyon Drake as much as I do. Like, I think that guy is going to just tear up the league this year. If you're at the back half of the first, are you going to go with Michael Thomas, or are you leaning towards Drake? All things in a vacuum. In a vacuum.
Oh, that's so tough.
That's brutal, man. I'd probably take Michael Thomas, because I think that he's like the absolute sure thing, where Kenyon Drake is, there's a little projecting going on here, because again, you have DeAndre Hopkins coming there, who's going to steal some of those targets that Drake was getting in the passing game. Christian Kirk was never really playing 100%. He's going into year three. Larry Fitzgerald didn't retire to come back to you know, to play a three target per game role. So there's going to be targets to go around here. Kenyon Drake has a little bit of the worry about, you know, the rushing upside of Kyler Murray. Does he run a little bit more? Does it cut back on the touchdowns for Kenyon Drake? I love Drake as a true three down back and a fast paced offense, and in a team that he's going to see a lot of 6-7 man fronts. So I do like Kenyon Drake an awful lot, and I'm really torn in that tier between Drake, Henry, and Mixon. Those guys are just like in that same tier for me, and I can make an argument for any of them. But I'd go Michael Thomas over Drake, just because Thomas, if he's on the field, he's a sure thing. Like, I don't even have to worry about it. It's whereas Drake, I'm not saying I don't have to worry about it, but there is a little bit of projecting going on, because he's never had a true workhorse role over an entire season.
So with the Cardinals offense, we're talking about Hopkins, Drake, all of these other weapons. There's been a lot of players in this offseason that have moved, like Hopkins, to new teams, veteran guys that have had a long production history. So Hopkins, Stephon Diggs, Brandon Cooks have all found new homes in this offseason. Where do you lean on these guys? Like, are you higher, lower? I know there's a lot of differing opinions on when wide receivers change teams. Like, they get a lot of hype. People are really in love with their new landing spots and offenses and stuff. But we've seen some of these guys struggle on these three receivers. Where do you kind of stand? Do you see them succeeding or struggling in their new spots?
Well, it's a case by case situation, right? And I say that because DeAndre Hopkins is a guy that's proven time after time. I mean, he's played with some terrible quarterbacks in his career, and the only guy that he didn't produce good numbers with was Brock Osweiler. And well, let's be real, nobody really did. But DeAndre Hopkins is almost quarterback proof, and he's proved it to this point. He's also a guy that was traded pretty early in the offseason, so I think that he got to get some work in with Kyler Murray this offseason. Whereas then you go to someone like Stephon Diggs. He's getting a downgraded quarterback. That's 100% certain. And we've seen, you know, Diggs with decent quarterback play in his career. I mean, even Case Keenum has actually been relatively efficient over his career. But Kirk Cousins played, obviously, he's one of the best deep ball passers in the league, one of the most accurate quarterbacks. And that matters. And I say that because Stephon Diggs, at what point do we say, why isn't Stephon Diggs getting the targets we want him to get? Because it does matter, right? And if we look at Amari Cooper, I love Amari Cooper. I think he's one of the most talented wide receivers in the league. But for whatever reason, he's not getting those 130-target, 140-target seasons like some of these other guys are. Stephon Diggs is falling into that same territory. If you're not getting the targets, it doesn't really matter. And then if we go and look at the Bills, Josh Allen was one of the worst deep ball passers in the league last year. Josh Allen, we knew coming into the league that he was a little bit inconsistent with his accuracy. It's not to say that Stephon Diggs is going to get more targets than the 96 or 98 that he had in Minnesota last year, but he's walking into a situation where John Brown has experience with Josh Allen. He performed pretty well in that offense as a wide receiver three. You had Cole Beasley getting over 100 targets. He has a role in that offense, whether people like it or not. So Diggs, I'm having trouble getting him over like 110, 115 targets in that offense. And then Brandon Cooks, he's a guy that's produced with multiple quarterbacks, but the thing is, they've all been really damn good quarterbacks.
It's absurd.
Brandon Cooks goes from Drew Brees to Tom Brady, and then it's like playing with Jared Goff, and obviously Goff didn't look great last year, but neither did Brandon Cooks because his quarterback play went down. So I am worried about Cooks, and there's the double risk with him, obviously with the whole concussion issue, going to a new team. There's concerns there. But Hopkins is – I am worried about all these guys to a certain extent, but Hopkins is the one that I'm not going to move too far down my draft board. I think I still have him as my number five wide receiver, so I'm not moving him down too much. The guy's just proven year in, year out. I mean, he actually – if you go back to Deshaun Watson's rookie year, Watson had a great rookie year, but DeAndre Hopkins actually averaged more fantasy points per game with Tom Savage under center than Deshaun Watson.
When I looked at what – there were some startling differences and wrinkles with Tim Kelly his first year as the OC. Like, they dropped off the map and went way run heavy in the red zone. Like, DeAndre Hopkins was fifth in red zone targets among wide receivers, tight ends, what have you, in the NFL in 2018. Now, you fast forward to 2019, he dropped to 30th. And so I think that his touchdown equity can definitely boost up even if he takes the hit in targets, depending on – with this offense, because it's still a little bit of a black bag. Like, we don't know, are they going to run faster because of the huge splits we saw last year? I think that they do, considering that they have better wide receiver talent. Yeah. I think Kingsbury is going to be able to run his offense more like he envisioned or he wanted to in year one, and they just didn't have the talent to do those things.
They're definitely going to play fast this year, because if you look at their per snap, like seconds per snap, they were among the league leaders, but their plays per game were like league average to below league average because their defense couldn't get off the field. That's going to – like, I remember watching right when this COVID stuff started, I went back and just, you know, out of boredom, I just watched a bunch of these – clips from the Cardinals YouTube channel of Kyler Murray's rookie year, of like the kind of like the behind the scenes stuff. And every time Kyler Murray ran to the sideline, Cliff Kingsbury was like, let's go. We want to go fast. They're going to play fast. And the other thing is that people don't talk about enough. When Kenny and Drake kind of came on last year, they were one of the most run heavy teams in the NFL. Like, the last 4 weeks of the season, they were top five in rushing rate. Like, they clearly look to run the football a good amount. Now, are they going to be, you know, the Baltimore Ravens or the Buffalo Bills or the Titans? No, but, you know, that could be the difference between DeAndre Hopkins being, you know, top five in targets, and maybe he falls to like eight or ninth. And, you know, that's enough to put like a Tyreek Hill or somebody over him.
Well, and moving over to Stephon Diggs, I know that Adam's ears are like setting on fire.
No, they're not. I love Josh Allen. I understand he's not accurate. I'm not an idiot.
I'm hearing tags go through the entire thing, and just like, we're not on video right now.
He's a terrible deep ball passer.
Blood red right now, but I think Stephon Diggs is a really, really interesting case. I'm going to be lower on him than possibly consensus. It just kind of depends right now. I think that Stephon Diggs does have it, because we saw it last year. He has it in his bag of tricks. Like, he is an efficient separator and things of that nature. Like, yeah. He could have an out where he doesn't need as many targets to produce if he is able to secure deep passes and things of that nature. Now, considering all the things around him and Josh Allen's deep ball completion percentage and things of that nature, do I think that that's probably the most likely of outcomes? No. But if his ADP does slip a little bit, like, he's going as either a high-end three, because the last time I looked at it, he was a low-end two in a lot of different formats.
He's like, he's always been kind of around that wide receiver 25 range. If Josh Allen can become, like, a league average deep ball passer, Diggs is probably going to be a screaming value, because I don't think any of us would argue that, I don't think there's 10 receivers in the NFL more talented than Stephon Diggs, but he's going to help Josh Allen more than I think Josh Allen is going to help him at this stage. Diggs, I think Diggs had 6 receiving touchdowns on deep balls last year, most in the NFL. Like, he's going to help Josh Allen. And the one thing I say all the time about Josh Allen is, and with maybe the strongest arm in the NFL, it's hard to do that, but at least he's overthrowing everybody on deep balls. Because if he's underthrowing guys, then he might be having, like, Jameis Winston-type interception seasons. I want to talk about Cooks, though, because I don't know if it's your fault, D-Bro, because we've been talking about the Texans so much. But I wrote an article on FTN. It's some of the overlooked pass-catching duos at Target in fantasy. And Cooks and Fuller made that list because people, and I tweeted about it, and the first, like, 5 responses were, they're always hurt. You know, they're always hurt. And, yeah, that needs to be discussed and considered when drafting. But you're not drafting Brandon Cooks and Will Fuller in the first 5 rounds. You're getting them in 7, 8 round. Brandon Cooks obviously played in an incredible offense in New Orleans, but we need to go back and look at how good this guy is indoors. I used the FTN splits app in the article, which is awesome. You can use it to pretty much find any sort of split you want, including indoors and outdoors. So since 2015, Brandon Cooks indoors, 0.47 receiving touchdowns per game compared to 0.33 outdoor, 75 receiving yards per game indoor compared to 65 per game outdoor, receptions nearly 5 per game, 4.5 outdoor, targets almost 7.5 per game, and DraftKings fantasy points go up by almost 3 per game indoor. Now, yes, he played in the Saints, they had a high scoring offense, but Deshaun Watson is maybe the 3rd best quarterback in the NFL. Like, this is still, without DeAndre Hopkins, going to be a good offense. And Tags, I don't know how you feel about Watson this year, but me and Debo are still fully on board. I think if these guys can stay healthy, with the way he's going to have to carry this team, especially with the defense, you know, the secondary especially, having some question marks, I think he could have, like, a get-on-my-back, carry-I'll-carry-you type of MVP season. So I'm really warming up to Brandon Cooks.
When the offseason started, I felt like when Brandon Cooks went to Houston, I was like, oh, he's a value. And I was struggling to choose between him and Will Fuller. But the more that this offseason goes on, the more that we find out that he's not going to get a chance to work with Deshaun Watson,
yeah.
I'm putting Will Fuller over him. But I do still think he's a value. My concern about Watson is that I don't think he has the guy. Like, the guy in the offense. Brandon Cooks was never the guy. Will Fuller has never been the guy. Randall Cobb, whatever. Kenny Stills, whatever. Kiki QT should be on the field over Randall Cobb. I don't really care. So it's like, when you look at this offense, Deshaun Watson doesn't have that valve that he's had in his entire career with DeAndre Hopkins. So that's why I'm worried about Deshaun Watson. Now, does that mean that he runs the ball a little bit more moving forward? Yeah, it's absolutely possible. I have him as the number 6 quarterback, so I'm right in line with ECR. If you wanted to take Watson over someone like Kyler Murray or Russell Wilson, I'm not going to fault you on that. But Russell Wilson, you could say the same thing that you're going to say about Deshaun Watson, and that, you know, his defense is as bad as it's ever been, and that the pass attempts are going to rise once again. But Russell Wilson has guys that he's thrown to. You know, he has Tyler Lockett, he has DK Metcalf, whereas Deshaun Watson, you could say he's had Will Fuller, but has he really? I mean, so I am a little worried about Watson, and, like, that team as a whole, really, I'm just kind of worried about the Texans, but it's just because that makes me wonder the wide receiver core they put together, because it doesn't make any sense. It really just doesn't.
So after finishing my Texans write-up, it kind of brought things in a little bit better light for me, in the sense of, like, some of – and not saying that I agree with all of their offseason moves, but trying to read the tea leaves of why and what – after doing that, it kind of brought things into a little bit better focus for me. So, like, under the first year with Kelly, they went more heavy with 11 personnel. So considering that Kiki QT is basically just shoved in the doghouse, like, we'll probably
Bill O'Brien never ever see him. Is not fond of him.
No, but that makes the sense of, like, if they went 11 more last year it makes a lot more credence as far as, like, why did you bring Randall Cobb in and sign a slot guy considering the other guys that you brought in here? And they shot up deep ball attempts and went from – Watson went from 3.9 per game to 5.4. So as well as throwing on top of all of this, they went super run heavy when they got into the red zone. So I'm with on Watson this year, but I think, like, looking at the design of this offense and the offseason moves, I think that they continue going more 11. I think that they're going to – Watson, if he does capture that outlier touchdown percentage, it's going to be on the back of two things. And that's rushing touchdowns, which we saw him set a career high last year with 7, and deep ball attempts, which this team, they're setting up that they're going to do those things. Like, they added Cooks on the outside. They have Fuller. They added what they feel, obviously, by their move, is a more legitimate slot wide receiver and a more stable piece for Watson. So looking at all of those factors, it kind of brings everything full circle, and I feel like I have a better contextual vision of, like, why and what for as far as the Texans. Right. So I'm more in on the Texans passing options. Cook scares me because of the concussions, but does he have a ceiling? Can he capture that? Absolutely. But yeah, talking about guys that, like, either change teams, like we were previously discussing, as well as guys that sometimes they don't live up to these expectations. So some guys that had some down seasons last year that we're looking, okay, can they bounce back? What do they do this year? Juju Smith-Schuster, Odell after changing teams, T.Y. Hilton with the injuries, as well as with A.J. Green. Tags, who, if any of these guys, are you higher than consensus? Do you think it can bounce back? Are they all just dust at this point? Where do you stand on these receivers?
I'm extremely high on Juju Smith-Schuster, and I don't know why people are forgetting about him. He's 23 years old. I mean, this offense, not only was he dealing with multiple injuries that he was trying to play through, and they ultimately shut him down for a little bit, but he was dealing with Mason Rudolph and Devlin Hodges as his quarterbacks. Nobody was really efficient in that offense, and you could talk about James Washington and the fact that he was more efficient than any wide receiver, and I think that comes down to him playing with Mason Rudolph back in college and that those two had a connection. So you've seen him get more targets than ever when Mason Rudolph was under center. That didn't shock me at all. But what most people don't realize, this Steelers team is a fast-paced team. They've ran at least 63 plays per game, I think going back to 2011, if I'm not mistaken. And this past season, they went down to 58.6. They slowed down the game. They played good defense. They're going to play good defense again. But this is a team that throws the ball every single year, 580-plus times. Last year, it was down to 510. Again, we had more James Washington than we thought. We had more Vance McDonald than anybody really wanted. We had more Jalen Samuels than I think they wanted, and that's why they drafted someone like Anthony McFarlane. But there's a lot of targets to go around here. And Juju Smith-Schuster, again, 23 years old, they're moving him back to the slot. That's the biggest thing that people are going to miss, because it's one thing to say, okay, Roethlisberger's come back. His efficiency will be back. His targets will be back. But he's going back to the slot, which is where he had the success early in his career. Deontay Johnson's going to play on the perimeter, and then it's going to be a battle between James Washington and Chase Claypool playing on the other side, and they're going to put Juju in the slot. And what does that mean? That means he's going to go up against cornerbacks that don't come on the field until they go three wide. And so basically you're talking about a backup cornerback, these nickel cornerbacks that come on the field, or a safety that comes down, whatever the case may be. Juju is going to have plus matchups in. The reason that Andy Reid's so successful moving guys like Tyreek Hill all over the field is because, and even, you know, Travis Kelce to a certain extent, when you put those guys in the slot, you can't bracket them. You have no idea which side of the field they're going to. You can't double team them, because then all of a sudden you're leaving the perimeter wide open. And Deontay Johnson can win in man coverage. James Washington can stretch the field. They added Eric Ebron. So Juju Smith-Schuster is a guy that if you want to go with that RB heavy approach and take running back in the first two rounds, I am willing to take Juju at the top of the third round.
Yeah.
A lot of times you don't have to. It seems like he's going in the fourth round, which is just – it blows my mind, because I have him as a top 8 wide receiver this year, which is much higher. His ADP right now is 18th and a half PPR, which is just – that's absurd.
Wow.
Yeah, you mentioned running back. There's a couple receivers that I have no problem if I want to go running back with my first two picks. I have no problem with them as my wide receiver ones. Juju is one of them. Adam Thielen's one of them, who I guess could kind of fall into this category as well. He obviously missed, I think he only played 10 games last year.
Yep.
People are a little bit worried about Thielen with injuries because he's getting up there in age, but he's also a guy who has really not been injured prior to last year. And it was that game, I believe it was against Detroit, where he caught the touchdown in the back of the end zone and just landed wrong on his hamstring or his foot and just couldn't really work his way back. Thielen, you want to talk about a guy that could easily walk into 150 targets. And I know people are saying, yeah, Minnesota's a run-heavy team, but that secondary is a little bit worrisome. They were bad last year, and they lost guys. Like, I could see them being a team that's not going to all of a sudden transform into pass-heavy team. That's the other thing with Pittsburgh. They've always been pass-heavy no matter what defense they've had, and they've really never had, like, a dreadful defense these past couple years. We know they've had elite defenses, so they're still going to be pass-heavy. So these, like, Juju and Adam Thielen, if I go running back, would absolutely be thrilled with starting with those two and then one of these receivers as my wide receiver one. Allen Robinson kind of falls into that mix too. What about T.Y. Hilton and A.J. Green? Because T.Y. Hilton and A.J. Green, if they're both healthy, are like the same kind of player, right? A.J. Green's a better player, but they're the same mindset when you're drafting, when you see them on the draft board. It's like, okay, they've been really good for years. Neither of them have ever been like the best player in fantasy, but they've always been really, really good. And people just tend to get bored drafting these guys. But I wrote an article about T.Y. Hilton. I'll talk about him after. But Tags, I know you want to talk about A.J. Green. I think you're the only one I've seen on Twitter and in articles and whatever in the industry that's actually encouraged and excited to draft A.J. Green. Everybody else is like staying away.
Yeah, if you were to tell me I had to spend a top 18 wide receiver pick on someone like A.J. Green, I'd be like, okay, I understand the concern there, because you have to have him as a wide receiver too in your lineup. You have to, you know, you're relying on him. You're drafting him inside the top four rounds. A.J. Green is going as the 28th, 29th receiver off the board. That's a wide receiver three territory. The guys that you're drafting in that range, like Michael Gallup, you're hoping that these guys can deliver you wide receiver three performances more often than not. That's basically your goal when you're taking a wide receiver three. A.J. Green, I've tracked wide receivers since back in 2000. Like, so this is going back, you know, to Calvin Johnson, you know, a lot of Marvin Harrison's in this group, Terrell Owens. A.J. Green, the only players who have produced wide receiver two or better numbers more than A.J. Green over his career, Michael Thomas, Julio Jones, Antonio Brown, and Odell Beckham. That's the end of the list. That's it. But yet people want to continually hate someone like A.J. Green, saying he can't stay healthy, he can't this. The last 2 years, yes, he wasn't healthy coming into last year. He shut it down, rightfully so, because that guy, he was in a contract year. It made zero sense for him to come back in a team that was going nowhere. So it wasn't selfish of him. He's a guy that's been a stand-up guy throughout his career. So even if you want to tell me, well, A.J. Green, I can't trust on him to play 16 games. Okay, well, give me 12 games. And if you give me 12 games of 60% or better wide receiver 2-plus production, give me him over the guys like Michael Gallup all day long. Over guys like Stephon Diggs, I would take A.J. Green over those guys every single day, because if he does stay healthy for all 16 games, you are getting a wide receiver 2 and potentially a wide receiver 1 who's playing with the best quarterback of his career.
I love A.J. Green on this podcast, on the Joe Burrow train, and A.J. Green's part of that, because the volume that is going to go through Cincinnati is going to be insane. This is a team that, and it's not crazy, I'm not throwing out something hot just for the sake of it, this team could lead the NFL in passing attempts, and literally kind of like part of my argument for other positions like David Johnson and such. The only reason that you fade A.J. Green, because currently in best ball right now, he's going as the wide receiver 30. Like, and sometimes he's dropping all the way to the ninth round, like the tail end of the ninth round. Mm-hmm. At that point, there is not many players, if any, in the eighth and ninth rounds that have the type of ceiling that A.J. Green has. And if you're not shooting for ceiling at that point, and you're not trying to follow volume, I don't know what to tell you. Like, you're playing fantasy probably wrong, and you're going to lose anyway. So I love A.J. Green. As far as T.Y. Hilton goes, I'm a little bit lower on him, and it's not so much because of T.Y. It's because how I think that the Colts want to run this offense this year. And I don't think it's necessarily like everybody's talking about, oh, they're just going to run the ball every time. They're going to be amongst the league lead in rushing attempts. That could definitively happen. But I think that they're going to throw, because let's just get it out the way. That, like, Frank Reich, up until last year with Jacoby Brissett, his offense has never ranked outside the top 14 in passing attempts. So it's not so much of a volume perspective as it is with T.Y. Hilton. We've seen some of the injuries start to pile up with the soft tissue things. Like, he tore his calf, missed the tail end of last year. But I think you're going to see T.Y. Hilton used in a very similar role as he was last year, which he survived on touchdowns, because Frank Reich is there's two big things with his offense right now, the passing offense. It's short passes, get it out quick. Like, over four of the last 5 years, he's been below the league average in ADOT, like by 0.8. So with Phillip Rivers, it's a perfect match, but it's not so great for T.Y. because T.Y., you want these long, deep passes, like we saw with Andrew Luck. And Rivers, that's just not in his bag of tricks now. Like, his deep ball is terrible. And can he dominate the short and intermediate areas of the field and be accurate there? Sure, I have no problems with that. But that's going to hurt T.Y. more than help T.Y. So I'm with you on Juju. I love him. I know we brought up Odell, and I don't want to just totally bury him. I'm a little bit lower because of two factors. I think the Browns do go run heavy this year. I think that if you buy into Odell, you're going to have to buy into efficiency, and you're going to have to buy in, can he make the best out of what targets that he has? And is the Browns defense terrible? Because like we're talking about with Minnesota, last year when they trailed, they were top 10 in passing rate. So if you transfer any of that to Cleveland, you're part of the equation for Odell has to be, what does the defense look like? I'm on board with thinking that the defense is pretty damn good, and they're probably going to bounce back with a full year of Myles Garrett. They have young corners that can absolutely, in stretches, they've shut down other offenses. So I lean more towards the Browns' defense is a good unit and can play up versus they're going to stink, and then you're going to have Baker. Like, I just don't see a lot of ways outside of just uber efficiency that Odell probably gets there and gives you, like, a real ceiling this year. But Tag's curious, because we didn't mention Odell much in this entire conversation. What are your thoughts on him? Are you kind of with me, like, where's the volume going to come from this year?
Yeah, I am worried about it because it seems like Kevin Stefanski is trying to recreate what he did in Minnesota. Obviously, mm-hmm. that started when they signed Austin Hooper in free agency, had David Njoku on the roster, and it was like, okay, are they going to trade Njoku? And then all of a sudden, they pick up his rookie option for the fifth year, and you're like, well, wait a minute. They're locking him up for two more years. Why? And then they go and they draft Harrison Bryant in the fourth round. So clearly, they're going to run a lot of two tight end sets like they did with Kyle Rudolph and Irv Smith. And if you look at Minnesota, they did the same thing. Kyle Rudolph got like a four-year, $35 million contract, and that was after they drafted Irv Smith. So you kind of wonder, okay, this guy loves tight ends, but meanwhile, neither of them even reached 50 targets last year. So you that's not going to eat up a whole lot of the targets. Beckham is a guy that you have to design an offense somewhat around. But again, you go back to Stephon Diggs. He's a top 10 NFL wide receiver, not fantasy, but actual wide receiver. And he got 96 targets, I think it was last year. And that was with Adam Thielen missing six games in that offense. So it is going to be somewhat of a limited volume. But at the same time, where he's being drafted in that wide receiver, 12 to 15 range, I'm not going to sit here and pretend that there's not some question marks about the players in that range. And the only one that I believe in that range has true, actual, like number one overall wide receiver one upside, that's Odell Beckham. So if you get Beckham as like your, if you go running back heavy and you get Beckham as your wide receiver one in the third or the fourth round, yeah, sign me up all day. But as a high-end wide receiver too, I think he's absolutely worth the risk there. There are question marks for sure. But again, the talent level of Odell, he's not going to see anything less than 120 targets. He might not have that upside that I'm talking about, that number one overall, because the team is going to run the ball a lot and they have a lot of talent. But we also have to factor in that Jarvis Landry is a guy coming off hip surgery. We don't know how he's going to bounce back. He's not going to have any games to take any real hits on that hip before he goes out there. So we could see him dip into that 90 to 100 target range. I think Jarvis Landry is the one I'm really, really concerned about this year, especially with that hip. Whereas Odell, he's actually going to be healthy this year in the second year with Baker Mayfield. And if you guys, I looked at this earlier today. That's the only reason it's fresh in my mind. Did you guys know how bad Jarvis Landry was the first year with Baker Mayfield? Like, do you guys remember that? Like, he had like 150 targets and he had like, I think it was like 900 yards. It was ridiculously bad. But then you look to the second season, it's like, even though Freddie Kitchens obviously ruined that team, Jarvis Landry was much more efficient. So maybe there's something to building chemistry with Baker Mayfield. Yeah. And I'm assuming that Odell will do that this offseason. He's far too talented not to produce.
Cleveland has used Jarvis Landry way more down the field than he ever was in Miami. That probably has a lot to do with it. But I remember that first year for Jarvis where he had so many like 11 target, 5-catch games. It was so out of character for him because he was always a guy that catches like 80% of his targets, it feels like. So yeah, Odell's interesting. I'm really interested to see what his touchdown numbers could look like, because if Jarvis is felt like good to go and fine, like there's two players with more targets inside the 10-yard line than Jarvis Landry last year. It was Travis Kelce and Kenny Golladay. Like, he was really heavily targeted down there. Austin Hooper, I think, is going to have a big role down there. And if they continue to, if they use those two tight ends, whether it's Njoku or whoever, like they're, and plus the running backs, they're going to have a lot of weapons down in the red zone. So I'm fine with Odell where he's going, but he's not somebody that I'm like running to draft either.
So I know we mentioned the sophomore receivers, so we're talking about some of these veteran values and bounce back guys. And a lot of, like we were discussing, these sophomore guys are going ahead of the veteran guys. So tags A.J. Brown, Terry McLaurin, oh, the love list. DK Metcalf, Hollywood Brown, Debo, Deontay Johnson. Another guy that I'm going to bury the lead and I'm going to bring up here in a second. Sophomore guys, who are you in on? Who are you fading? Like, what are your thoughts on these guys?
Yeah, I'm in on DK Metcalf where he's being drafted. He's moving up draft boards slowly but surely, and I think rightfully so. I mean, he's a guy that he came into the league raw, and you knew that he didn't run very many routes. And if you were to go to Next Gen Stats, you'd actually be able to see his route tree in the first couple weeks. And then you watch as the year went on, they started moving him around a little bit more, and you started to see his numbers increase. And then all of a sudden, they get to the playoffs, and he's breaking rookie records. Russell Wilson has always been extremely efficient throwing to his wide receivers. So I want people to just stop saying, oh, Tyler Lockett can't remain efficient. Doug Baldwin couldn't remain efficient. DK Metcalf isn't going to be as efficient. No, they are, because Russell Wilson's just that damn good. He's so underrated as a quarterback, and I cannot believe the guy doesn't have an MVP yet. Without him on that team, they're terrible. Like, legitimately one of the worst teams in the NFL. So I'm in on DK Metcalf. He actually has a legitimate top 10 upside. Terry McLaurin plays for a bad football team, but he's just so good. Him and Haskins obviously have a connection, and I don't think the ceiling is there with McLaurin that it is with Metcalf. So I wouldn't say I'd take McLaurin over Metcalf, but AJ Brown's the one that really, I'm really torn on this one. So when the NFL draft happened last year, my 1A and 1B was Metcalf and AJ Brown. I loved them both. And after getting thrown to in college at Ole Miss by Jordan Tamu, both of them look like studs. And AJ Brown, I hated his situation going to Tennessee. I'm like, what is happening here? You know, it's a very low volume offense. Corey Davis is the alpha, and even Mike Vrabel said before the season, someone started asking, who's the number one receiver? And he's like, it's not a question. Corey Davis is the most talented. He's our number one, guys. And AJ Brown forced his hand as the year went on. But here's the thing. Ryan Tannehill is uber efficient. We know that. But this Tennessee Titans team, I don't know if anybody realized it, they've thrown the ball 432 and 448 times the last 2 years under Mike Vrabel. They just lost their right tackle in Jack Conklin, which was probably one of the only – I mean, Taylor Lewan is above average, but losing a bookend is not a very good thing. It's going to hurt the run game too. But the offensive line's not great. So it's like I don't want to go too far in the wrong direction. AJ Brown's a very, very, very good football player, but I still worry about the situation, because if they are throwing the ball fewer than 500 times, it's like, oof. And then we know that they don't throw the ball on the goal line because, well, that's Derrick Henry territory, rightfully so. So I've gotten into arguments about AJ Brown because I really do understand both sides of the argument, but unless he gets a massive increase in, like, unless they change the offensive philosophy and say, we're going to throw the ball 500 times, I do worry about him, because a 25% target share on 400 targets or on 450 targets, you know, you're talking like 110. So that's just not elite volume to get into those top 12 wide receivers. And that's where his ADP is creeping. It's creeping all the way up into, you know, the top 15 wide receivers. I would rather at that point take someone like Odell Beckham.
Well, I'd rather go Calvin Ridley over that, because actually
that's not close, by the way.
Well, it is. Look, at best ball, A.J. Brown is wide receiver 14 and Calvin Ridley is 15. Sorry, dude. I will smash Calvin Ridley every day, all day, like twice on Sunday.
Do you guys want to get this out of the way while we're here?
I love Ridley. I've loved him ever since he came out of college. I've been on the Calvin Ridley train. I know, Tags, you've been riding right there. Hell, if not driving the train. So, as the guest of the pod, you lead it off, dude.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, so Matt Ryan under Dirk Cutter, they're going to be top 8 in pass attempts, because they are every single year. Like, he's been the offensive coordinator 4 times for the Falcons, you know, off and on, whatever. But they've been top, I think it's actually top 7 in each of the 4 years in pass attempts. So, you know, the pass attempts aren't going to go anywhere. Todd Gurley. Is he falling off his rocker? Are you worried about injuries? You can argue about that all you want, but one thing we do know is that Dirk Cutter has not produced a very efficient run game. That's hands down true. So if Gurley can't withstand a 20 carries per game, they're going to go back to that passing game. So look at Mohamed Sanu. He saw 96 or 94 targets in 2018. He was on pace for 96 targets before being traded in 2019. They got rid of Austin Hooper, a guy who was on pace for 110 targets. They I know they brought in Hayden Hurst, who I do like, but I'm not going to sit here and pretend that Hayden Hurst is going to walk into 110 targets. Julio Jones is now 31 years old. Ridley, in the six games playing without Sanu, he saw 49 targets. That would amount to a 131 target pace over a 16-game season. Ridley, and I said this, and again, I know it's the cool thing to say now, but I came out with an article back, I think it was the end of January, where I said 2020 early bold predictions. I said that Calvin Ridley is going to be the 2020 version of Chris Godwin. And a lot of people are starting to come around to that to understand where I was coming from, because the Falcons never really replaced Mohamed Sanu in this offense. I mean, do you think that Russell Gage is going to see 98 targets or 96 targets that Mohamed Sanu was on pace for? No. Do you think that Hayden Hurst is going to see those 110 plus targets that Austin Hooper was on pace for? No. So Ridley is a guy that, yes, I loved him back in the draft. I remember the combine when everybody started poo-pooing him and saying, oh, his combine sucked and this and that. I'm like, okay, guys, let's just see what happens, because the guy can separate. And if there's one thing that translates in the NFL, it's separation. He gets it all the time. And knowing that Julio Jones is on the field, it only helps him, because he's getting backup corner. He's not backup cornerbacks, but second tier cornerbacks. And it's very rare for a team to have two top tier cornerbacks. So, yeah, Calvin Ridley's my dude.
I love Calvin Ridley. You're talking about the six games without Sanu last year. He was on pace in those. And I know we talk about everybody's like, oh, well, it's a small sample. Dude, we're dealing with small samples. Even one season is a small sample, so get out of here with all of that. But six games without Sanu, he was on pace for 279 PPR points. In the last 4 years, that would have put him as the wide receiver 2, 10, 4, and 5. So getting him at 15 is easy money, because like you're talking about, Todd Gurley is dust. I am not worried about him. Come at me on Twitter. I do not care, because I will have no Todd Gurley. This offense is going to throw the ball. Ridley is a baller. He showed that. People wanted to knock him, like you're talking about, Tags. He came out as a little bit of an older prospect. All he did was produce from the second that he stepped on an NFL field. That's all he did.
Yep.
And he still continued to do it. If we would have had 16 games of Calvin Ridley last year, we wouldn't even be having this conversation, because he would have already put up stud numbers, and he would have been like, all right, he's hashtag good. He's already done the same thing that Chris Godwin did last year. That's the only reason why this conversation is being pushed into 2020. Give me all the Calvin Ridley, dynasty, best ball, redraft, all of it, baby. I want all the Calvin Ridley.
Want the future Calvin Ridley at a discount right now? Jerry Jeudy in drafts is stupid cheap. Like, I've seen people getting him at 107 in rookie drafts. It's the most idiotic thing. I don't know if I've ever seen something so dumb in dynasty leagues, for people reaching for running backs to take over Jerry Jeudy.
It's because a lot of people think that he's the second best wide receiver on the team, which is not true.
And he's also thought he was the second best receiver in this draft class, which is also not true.
I love CD Lamb, I'm not going to lie.
That was my best comp for Jerry Jeudy. I kept saying, like, look, like, he's Calvin Ridley, but he has a little bit more juice. Like,
yep, he's a bigger Calvin Ridley.
A little bit shiftier than Calvin Ridley. But, like, if you're looking at, like, we're talking about we're high on Calvin Ridley. If you like Ridley, you should love Jeudy. Like, there's no way that you can't. Like, I mean, obviously you can, but you're wrong. But
yeah, it's just one plays with Matt Ryan and an offense that's going to throw 620 times, where the other one plays with Drew Locke and an offense that's going to throw the ball 520. So, I mean, that's the only. But yeah, Jerry. But in terms of future, yes. Like, if you're in dynasty leagues, like, attack. Go get Jeudy right now. I have him ranked as a top 20 dynasty receiver, and I don't know if I'm the only one that has him that high. But I'm buying these players before they break out, because you're not going to be able to attain them afterwards.
Well, yeah. And talking about the breakouts, I would be remiss if I did not talk about – everybody's heard me love list Terry McLaurin on Twitter, on other podcasts, so I'm not going to step too far into that boat again as to say that Terry McLaurin is a stud. If you're drafting him as a top 20 wide receiver, he's going to pay off on that cost. Washington's going to throw more this year. That is definitively coming. Turner is going to throw the ball more. But the guy that I got to discuss before we move on to another topic is Darius Slayton, because – I'm hearing all these things about he's going too high, he's not really the guy, and if Darius Slayton played on a different team, considering what he did in his rookie season, I think we would be talking about Darius Slayton in a far different light, considering the ceiling games that he had. He had 8 touchdowns and over 700 receiving yards as a 5th-round rookie, and I understand the draft capital was not there, but He's a 4-3 speed guy. He played all on the outside. After he became a starter, so weeks 5 through 17, he was the wide receiver 26. And he separated versus all different types of coverage. Like, the guy had, versus press, above 66% catch rate. Above zone, man, and press, he had above a 106 QBR versus all of them in his rookie season. He's the breakout guy. He's the guy that just excelled from the first time that he got opportunities, and he's going as the wide receiver 41. And people are talking about, okay, well, that's too big of a price to pay. And I'm like, is it? Is it really? Considering that you're drafting him as your fourth wide receiver, sometimes fifth. I mean, he's going in the 11th round now in best balls. And that they're so worried about Golden Tate, who's getting long in the tooth. They're worried about Sterling Shepard, who's never shown that he can be a leading receiver, much less even stay on an NFL field, like just like Evan Ingram. And Darius Slayton is the guy in that entire depth chart that looks different, that runs different, that can succeed on the outside because Tate and Shepard can't do that. I want Darius Slayton on all, if not like as much exposure as I possibly can get, because I think that he is that good. He is the dude there, and he's going to take another step forward this year. But I'm curious, what are your thoughts on Darius Slayton? Because, Adam, you haven't gotten your love list guys in here yet for sophomore guys, and then we'll shoot it over to tags, because I know that my take on Slayton is very hot, but I'm with it. I'm curious if you're going to throw some water at me.
First of all, I definitely love Metcalf, especially if they use him differently in more ways, because obviously his route tree was the biggest question mark coming out of college, but that didn't seem to be too big of a problem, and led the NFL in end zone targets. Russell Wilson always is among the league leaders, not only in end zone throws, but in just efficiency in that department. So, love DK. I think if they open up the playbook just a little bit, that guy could be top 10, and I don't think anybody should be shocked. Perfectly fine, McLaurin. You worry about the touchdowns. He should have had, like, 3 more touchdowns last year. Haskins missed him on, like, wide-open throws. I forget what game it was, but it was, like, shocking how bad the throw was, how open he was. He could see 150 targets this year with that team. Still not expected to be very competitive. And, yeah, I mean, the thing with Slayton is you have Tate and Shepard, but I feel like with what they both do, one of those guys is going to get phased out, because when Tate and Shepard were both active last year, Shepard was outside like 70% of the time, and he's been a far less efficient player on the perimeter in his career. And Slayton has obviously shown that, you know, obviously it was, you know, only 1 year, but he's shown that he can be a difference maker out wide. I think the Giants are going to be passing a good bit with the way their secondary looks. So I don't really have a problem with Slayton. And then, I mean, Hollywood Brown, again, you want to talk about a concentrated passing offense when they do pass. It's going to be Hollywood Brown. It's going to be Mark Andrews. And, oh, by the way, Mark Ingram is not going to have 5 receiving touchdowns again. So if Hollywood can stay healthy, I mean, potential league winner right there in the middle rounds.
Yeah, I'm going to go back to Darius Slayton. And I am – where he's being drafted, I have no issue if you want to take a shot on him. But I by no means do I think that he's a sure thing. And I say that because this Giants team, I don't know if anyone realizes that there was never a game where they had Sterling Shepard, Golden yep. Tate, Slayton, Evan Ingram, and Saquon Barkley on the field at the same time. That is a lot of mouths to feed. And on top of that, you had Daniel Jones, who was extremely inconsistent in terms of, like, it was either he's finishing as a top 3 quarterback or he's busting and he's killing your week. So knowing that there's all those options, knowing that Daniel Jones is still going to go through some growing pains as a player in a new offense too, there's a lot of things to worry about in terms of here. I just feel like Darius Slayton, even after he broke out, like, he had multiple 100-yard games, I think it was in week 10 and 12 or somewhere in that range. After that, there were a couple games where he had like 2-3 targets, and that doesn't happen to a player that they're looking to for. Like, I don't think he proved himself enough to the point where they feel like he's like a can't miss player. I still think they like him. Obviously, they drafted him in the 5th or 6th round, so they liked him. But I just don't see him getting it over Sterling Shepard or Golden Tate or someone like Saquon Barkley. These targets have to go somewhere. The thing that they have going for them is that New York Giants defense is pathetic. It's brutal. I mean, like, it's. That's a contender for the worst defense in the league.
Yeah, their,
like,
D-line looks okay, but their back end is really, really bad.
It is brutal. It's so bad. So that's your hope. But I think Darius Slayton, I think he's going to be a guy that I would rather play in DFS than I would in, like, a season-long league, because I think you're going to have difficulty finding what weeks he's actually going to break out. That's the problem.
So we've brought up Jerry Jeudy, Slayton, some of these wide receivers that are going in the middle, late rounds. Tags, good God. I'm pulling up the show sheet here, and all I'm staring at under here to help lead me into this segment is a picture of a certain receiver that it shall not be named, because I'm going to let Tags lead this off, and I'm going to let Adam just sit here and stew for a second. So, God, we're off the rails. Tags, wide receiver values. Thank you, Adam, for the show.
Oh, man. I'm going to go with Jalen Reagor right now.
Yes.
And it's weird to say a rookie wide receiver. It really is. And the thing is, I actually was thinking about using Henry Ruggs here because I think they're both tremendous values late in drafts right now. Obviously, I am worried about the offseason and the lack of it and all that stuff. But when you think about the Eagles, like, just think about this for a moment. Carson Wentz was still productive last year. He still got it done despite them missing basically every receiver. They were down to Greg Ward, a guy who nobody had ever heard of. And Greg Ward starts becoming a fantasy producer. It's almost like a foregone conclusion that Alshon Jeffrey is going to start the year on the PUP list, which means he's out for a minimum 6 weeks. You have DeSean Jackson talking about terrible things on his Instagram, and he might not be with the team. They're still evaluating. But either way, even if he's still on the team, he's going to be 34 later this year. He's not a guy that's going to see 10 targets per game. So when they selected Jalen Reagor in the first round over Justin Jefferson, it tells me how high they were on Reagor as a player, because Jefferson almost seemed to fit that offense to a T in terms of that big slot receiver that they wanted to replace Nelson Aguilar.
Right.
But Reagor can play all over the field. Like, he's a playmaker. He's another guy that he didn't have a good combine and people were ragging on him after a 4.4 40, but it's like, okay, 4.4 speed is not a bad thing.
I was going to say, like, what?
But no, people were saying they expected a 4.2, and it's because he put on weight for the combine because he wanted to come in at over 200 pounds, and Reagor just overthought it. But he's a tremendous football player. He can be used all over the place. He is quickly going to become the favorite of Carson Wentz. And in their offseason workouts that they were able to have, coaches just kept raving about him, saying that he's the real deal. And we kind of know that, but it's more about Carson Wentz having no one else to go to. You know what I mean? So
yeah,
Jalen Reagor is a steal, and he's someone that's going to move up draft boards as you know, the next month goes on.
Reagor was not my pick, obviously, but struggled between him and Jefferson as my wide receiver one among the rookies for fantasy for since the draft, really. And the thing is, there's an easy path to 100 plus targets if you look at this receiving corps for Philadelphia right now. Obviously, Alshon Jeffrey, like you said, I would be shocked if he didn't start the season on the PUP. So there's 6 weeks without him. DeSean Jackson, not just with the off the field stuff, but this guy's missed 26 games since 2015. And they bring in Marquise Goodwin, who's missed 12 games over the last two seasons. Like, they have no semblance of consistent health at the receiver position. And yeah, Zach Ertz and Dallas Goedert are going to be heavily involved at tight end, but Zach Ertz has also missed some time. So, like, there is a very clear path to where Jalen Reagor is the number one receiver on this team at some point this season. And like you said, Carson Wentz and Doug Peterson, no matter who they have, they're still going to be an above-average offense. So I am all in on Jalen Reagor, and if you're looking at his downplay from last season in college, just look at the quarterback play, and that's all I'll say.
So I'm on board with Reagor. I think we're all in agreement here, and I want to make a really clear point on Reagor, because I hear it talked about because of his speed and his game. He is not just a deep threat guy. He is not just a guy that is going to run nine routes, and that's the only bag of tricks that he has. I think that he's an X receiver. People want to talk about, like, tape watching, things of that nature. The quarterback play for TCU, their entire offensive design was total trash. But if you want to watch two games that give you a decent idea about what I'm talking about, if you go watch Reagor versus West Virginia and Ohio State in 2018, high volume games, you get a really good sense of what kind of player Reagor is. And in watching him in those two games versus top competition, he separates. He can win deep. He can win in contested catches, because people talk about concentration drops with him. First of all, I think that's BS. Second of all, some of that comes down to ball placement. Like, if the quarterback play is bad and he's going up for contested catches, sometimes these guys, if they're making these plays, we have to give a little bit of credence by the fact of, like, if you're not that talented, you might not even have a chance at even trying to make a play on some of these passes. So balls that were poorly placed, thrown behind him. I'm like, look, you take half of these other wide receivers, they wouldn't even have a chance to make that catch. The fact that he's even coming down with it or close to it, give that man his due. But the guy that I got to mention here, I know that I said that I was not that high on T.Y. Hilton. The guy that I love for the Colts is Paris Campbell. And he is one of the guys that I will find myself taking because, like I'm talking about, I think the Colts bounce back as far as passing volume with Rivers under center. The other thing about it, like I'm talking about short intermediate passes, that is Paris Campbell's wheelhouse. Last year, I know it's a very small sample, 24 targets. 33% of what he was throwing was bubble screens. He's going to be running out of the slot this year. You're talking about free releases for a guy that runs in the 4.3s. So he's a burner. He can do things after the catch. Heck, 101 of his 127 yards that he had last year, which is not a lot. I'm not going to sit here and say, like, okay, he had 1,000 yards. But you're talking about nearly all of this guy's production was after the catch. If that's what the design that the Colts are going to have, the fact that he is going currently as wide receiver 64, if T.Y. Hilton misses any weeks, you have Paris Campbell that's going to be competing with what? Jack Doyle and a rookie Michael Pittman that, as much as I like Pittman's game, is going to be asked to win outside from day one. He doesn't have the profile as a guy that broke out at like age 18. And just stepping into the X receiver role in an NFL offense with, like we're talking about, with the offseason that we have, Paris Campbell's walking into year two. I understand that the quarterback's different, but he understands the scheme. He's being asked to do easier things running from the slot, considering the corner matchups. I just think that he's a guy that can explode this year, that he could be the one, or at least one of the players you get at the drafts, that could be this year's Terry McLaurin, and you're just like, holy crap, I'm so glad that I got exposure to this guy because he's winning me weeks.
I do like the call, and I don't even know if he needs an injury to T.Y. Hilton, to be honest with you, because since Frank Reich has come there to Indianapolis, he hasn't used T.Y. Hilton in the slot very much. It's been like about 30% of the time. And now with Chester Rogers gone, they're going to move Paris Campbell there. And if you go back, I mean, you look at Philip Rivers over the course of his career with the guys over the middle of the field. You look at Antonio Gates, Hunter Henry, Keenan Allen, even going back to as far as Eddie Royal. I'm sure you guys remember that name. He was the guy that produced with Philip Rivers over the middle of the field. So Rivers' deep ball, it suffered last year. It wasn't very good. I think that's why we saw Mike Williams suffer so much. So Paris Campbell, I don't even know if he needs a T.Y. Hilton injury. I mean, obviously it would help his target share, but he's somebody that I'm growing more and more fond of because he has experience in the system. The problem is that even though Michael Pittman doesn't have any experience, Philip Rivers is he doesn't have any chemistry with any of these players. So it's kind of like he has no allegiance to anybody. So there's a chance that Pittman could lead the team in touchdowns. He's more of like a Vincent Jackson type. You have T.Y. Hilton, the proven veteran. That's probably going to get some targets. But Paris Campbell is a dart throw. I have no issue with that. And I'm going to throw in one more name because I think his talent is still undervalued, and that's John Ross, a guy playing with Joe Burrow. I think John Ross starts as the third wide receiver in that offense. I do like Boyd. I do like Green. But I just think this offense as a whole, because it was bad last year, that people are fading these guys. And John Ross is a very good football player. And if you were to go on like NFL Game Pass and actually sit down and watch the film on John Ross, he gets open quite a bit. It's just Andy Dalton struggled to hit him down the field. And that's where obviously the money plays are at. So John Ross is a guy. Paris Campbell is the same thing. Michael Pittman, you could bring him into that conversation where these are guys that you need at the end of your fantasy roster because you need someone to cut in those first couple weeks of fantasy. You need someone, you know, because like if you want that Philip Lindsay, you don't want someone like, you know, that's suspended for the first 4 weeks that you're like you're holding on to being like, oh, I hope it turns into something, because then you're forced to hold on to those players like I did with AJ Green last year. You need players that you can cut. And fortunately, you're going to find out week one with these guys exactly what you have.
All right, Adam. I think we've pushed you to the far back.
I'm not even doing like values. I'm just gonna say his name, Marvin Jones. I don't need to say anything else. People know. You guys know. Just, but I'm just gonna say before he got hurt to end the season, Kenny Golladay outpaced him in targets by 2. This is more of a 1A, 1B situation than people think. Yes, Kenny Golladay is the future. Marvin Jones is a free agent after this season. Kenny Golladay is the guy you are obviously gonna draft before Marvin Jones, but I'm just going to 6 rounds later take the guy who, look, Marvin Jones, I'm pretty sure before Marvin Jones got hurt and before Stafford got hurt, these guys were like 1 and 2 in touchdowns. Like, they just look at these guys in the end zone. Marvin Jones has scored at least 9 touchdowns every year with Detroit outside of injuries. So yeah, he's, you know, outside the top 30 receivers, I think he could be a top 25 guy easily. I like this Lions passing offense. And I'll throw in one more since I always give Marvin Jones. I'll go Anthony Miller. I'll go with the Bears, Anthony Miller.
Take it.
Taylor Gabriel missed 5 of those games in the last 6 weeks of the season. And Anthony Miller, I believe, didn't even play week 17 either. So, look, he was extremely involved when Taylor Gabriel's down. Taylor Gabriel's not there. They don't have anything consistent at receiver outside of Allen Robinson. His targets are going to be way more consistent this year, I think. The offense should be better. And if Nick Foles is under center, we've seen him target the slot a ton. Anthony Miller was in the slot nearly 78% of the time. And like I said, their offense has to be better. They were bottom three in three and outs per drive, plays per drive. They should be better as a whole.
Yeah, I love the call on Marvin Jones. You know I love him as well. So, Tags, before we get you out of here, who are the wide receivers that you're going to find on most of your rosters this year? Just a few different guys.
Yeah, it'd be Juju Smith-Schuster and A.J. Green. Those guys are going to be on a lot of my roster. Jalen Reagor, as I mentioned, is a tremendous value late, and I'm going to grab John Ross in one of the last couple of rounds just because, you know, if it pans out, it pans out. And I put your trust in Joe Burrow. That's basically what it comes down to.
I think my leans are going to be, obviously, we discussed a lot of Calvin Ridley love. I will be aggressive in targeting him. The other guy that I'll do the same with, if I could stack both of them, like I'm probably running naked through the streets. If I can get Calvin Ridley and DJ Moore, that's the money start right there. Like if I can get running back, and then start with those two as my wide receiver one and two, I mean, it's game over. But we kind of talked about it very briefly. I want Will Fuller on nearly every team that I can get him. I believe in the talent. I believe that his ADP will never match his upside in this offense. And for everybody that wants to still discuss injuries, because Twitter needs new injury jokes and Will Fuller jokes, that's very much definitive, because they're all played out. So y'all need to come with some better material. His upside is just immense in this offense. In the 23 games with Deshaun Watson, I mean, you're looking at Will Fuller. He's paced out over that long of a span for 1,000 yards and 7 to 9 touchdowns. Like, I love the guy, and I won't get away from him. Like, injuries be damned. But, Adam, who's your guys? Who are you going to have on your teams?
Marvin Jones, obviously, forever. Like, there is probably a 5% chance, maybe even less, that I leave any draft without one of these receivers. Marvin Jones, Adam Thielen, and a guy we didn't talk about, but I think he's going to catch 100 balls, and he's going to have more touchdowns for sure. And he gets, like, 150 rushing yards a year, Robert Woods.
100%. Yeah, love the Robert Woods call. So, Tags, before we get you out of here, anything you want to plug? What are you working on right now for Fantasy Pros?
Oh, man, what am I not working on? basically, all I ask is that you guys obviously check out my work at fantasypros.com, but in season I do a piece called The Primer, and that's my heart and soul, man. It's about 30 to 35,000 words a week where I do a paragraph on every player from every game, trying to give you guys the process behind the player. You know, as we know, as fantasy players, we know that sometimes the result isn't always ideal, but if you understand the process, it'll help you choose between players. So yeah, check out The Primer and listen to the Fantasy Pros Football Podcast.
Thanks for stopping by, Tags. This was a blast. It's been a long time coming, man, but we crushed so many wide receivers on this. I want to make sure everybody's following Tags again on Twitter at Mike Taglieri NFL. Thank you for tuning in. This was a blast. We are going to be back next episode to preview the tight end position with the scores Justin Boone. But for Fade the Chalk, we're out.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Fade the Chalk with Derek and Adam. Make sure to follow your hosts and the podcast on Twitter at @DBRO_FFB, at @APPfeiffer24, and at @ChalkFade. Smash that subscribe button so you don't miss an episode.